this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Hey, have you ever been looking for a way to stay out of trouble, protect yourself from temptations, and make the path to success smoother than ever? And do you think you could even use this same system to overcome addiction and anxiety? Now, on today's show, I'm making a very, very bold claim, and it's that my 3C formula can do all of that and more. Today, we're going to dive into the most intense, emotional, and deepest conversation you've ever heard here at ETR Radio. Now, if you don't know the 3C formula, all of that will be revealed today on this very special edition of the show. Hi, this is your host, Craig Valentine, and on today's show, you're going to hear me talking with my very good friend, Eric Kerr. Eric recorded this interview as part of his Healing Addiction Summit to serve family and friends of addicts who are helping those addicts to recover. Now, one of the biggest issues for addicts and those in recovery is anxiety around, now what? What do I do? So much of their lives has been spent chasing the addiction that when they are in recovery, filling their life and time and relationships with new purpose is difficult, and it causes a lot of anxiety, depression, and that can even spiral into relapse. So when they don't have that vision or know that a vision is possible, they struggle. And a lot of family members don't know how to support this new vision either. So knowing this, Eric asked me to teach my 3C formula to help this desperately underserved audience. Now, even if you aren't struggling with addiction, what I teach in this interview is going to help you do several things. First, it'll help you stay out of the temptations that hold you back in every area of life. It's going to help you control your thoughts, words, and deeds to get faster results at work and at home. It's going to put in place systems so you no longer have to rely on willpower. And it's going to build a fence around you and your success so that it keeps bad habits out of your life. And I'm also going to talk about how my father should have dealt with his addiction and how you can deal with your mistakes guilt-free. This is definitely a very special edition of the show, and you're going to love this powerful conversation on a touchy subject that I have with Eric. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com.
Craig, thank you so much for making time available for this important topic. And you're a good friend of mine. We've known each other for a couple of years. And I've always really admired what you have been able to accomplish in your own life and also what you've been able to help other people accomplish in their lives. And so would love to have you share a little bit about your personal story and where you came from and what got you to where you are right now. And then we can go into the three C's.
Yeah, absolutely. So the biggest thing that I struggled with was anxiety. But first, before we get to that and tell everyone how I overcame that, I want to talk a little bit about basically how I grew up. I grew up on a small farm in a small town. I grew up with a scarcity mindset, a father who was an alcoholic. I grew up in a city where, you know, kids at age 15 and 16 started drinking. And that is something that kind of started me down my path to my troubles that didn't hit me until I was about 30 years old. But I wanted everyone to know that that's where I started. And, you know, I was a pretty good kid most of the time, you know, like 5.5 days a week. But, you know, those those 1.5 days, I really made up for those other 5.5 days where I was.
That was Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it really start like Friday afternoon and then end around, 5 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. So that's where I started, you know, grew up in that small town, Stratford, Ontario, Canada, and home of Justin Bieber, in case anybody listening has teenage girls or, you know, kids of a younger generation. So it's the same hometown. And you know, it's funny enough, his parents had the same issues as I did, too much partying when they were kids. But then I went on to college, and I got lucky in that I started writing for Men's Health magazine in 2000. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a bit of a hypocritical lifestyle, you know, telling people how to work out and exercise, and then, you know, working out and exercising, but then again, being bad on those that day and a half. And so I built up an online fitness business, and then I started into helping other people start online fitness businesses. But it was around 2006 when my business was going up that I started suffering from what I called the paradox of freedom, Eric, which was when I had too much freedom in my life. I had too much freedom, so I worked all the time, and I had too much freedom, so those 1.5 days became like 3.5 days over the course of the week when I was out late and drinking too much and, you know, too much alcohol, too much caffeine. And it ended up causing me severe anxiety. It was anxiety that was so bad that I felt like I was having a heart attack for 6 weeks straight from the moment I woke up at about 3 o'clock in the morning because I couldn't sleep till the moment I finally was able to fall asleep around 11 o'clock after lying there for about 2 hours. And it felt like, you know, tingling from the top of my head down to the end of my fingertips. And also I had tight chest, an elevated heart rate. I couldn't breathe properly. And that led to me actually going to the emergency room twice over this 6 week period and walking in and saying, I think I'm having a heart attack. Now, that was the lowest point in my life when I went for the second time. Fortunately, the doctors and the staff there, they did some tests and they showed me that there was nothing physically wrong with me. But I was suffering from what I called the black box of anxiety. I didn't know, I couldn't explain it to myself, and I couldn't explain it to other people. And I had to actually ask one of my clients, an obese, 5'3", 310-pound, 53-year-old lawyer at one time. I had to ask him to take me to the emergency room. And I looked like I was in great shape. And so that's why I call it the black box, because I couldn't explain it to him. He thought I had two heads when I asked him to take me to the emergency room, but I also couldn't explain it to myself until I got told by the doctors that everything was okay with me. And so I'm sure that people listening, suffering from anxiety, know what this feels like. And I'm sure that we can also relate to the people around us who are going through some struggles that they are undergoing or living in a black box where they can't explain it to you. You can't understand them. They can't explain it to themselves, and everybody is just in the dark. And that is so frustrating because there's no communication, there's no expectations, and we really are just confused because it's all a mystery. And that's one of the hardest things for us to deal with, is that mysterious element around things. Just like when someone's hiding something from us, it really is difficult. When we know that they're hiding something, when we have that sense that they're hiding something, and it becomes so frustrating. Or when you're waiting for results from a test, whether it's your driver's exam or a health test, you know, causes a lot of anxiety. So what I did was I did a deep dive into trying to figure out everything that I possibly could in order to overcome my anxiety.
Now, and Craig, so let me interrupt you here real quick, certainly. Because It's really interesting, because I did an interview a few days ago with a soldier. He was a major in the Army, and he was killed by a sniper, like literally died for 30 minutes. Oh. And he was brought back, and he said, on the front, I was on Oprah. I was the hero. I had all the medals. I was pressed. I looked like everything was fine. But I was slipping into the deepest, darkest depression and anxiety. And I had no idea why. I couldn't explain it to anybody. And so this seems to be a fairly common theme, and maybe a reason why people who are suffering from addiction or family members and loved ones don't talk about it enough. So how, I guess part of what I'd want to hear after you, while you're going through this three C's, is how would you recommend somebody talking about it? Because I think there's a lot of people that are suffering alone in the black box.
Yeah, absolutely, Eric. And in fact, I'm writing a book called Overcoming Anxiety. Overcoming the Black Box of Anxiety is the actual title. I'm writing that with our friend Tucker. And it's called, the subtitle is The Path Back to Peace. And one of those sections, and I'll make a note to talk about it, is getting outside of yourself. If somebody who's an alcoholic or somebody who is with anxiety, if all they do is hide it from other people, and you just go into your own head, it makes it worse. So I don't know. Are you a Star Trek fan, Eric?
I have watched many a Star Trek, but you know, I know what a true fan is, and I'm not going to put myself in that category. Okay. I'm not going to set myself up for questions I can't answer.
Right. Have you seen the movie where they put the worms in the guy's ears and they go into the brain? Okay. Yeah. That's like the only 5 minutes of Star Trek I've ever watched in my life. And it
obviously
just happened.
It was impactful.
It just happened to be like an amazing analogy, because that's what I, you know, use as when we're talking about getting inside your head. You know, those worms got inside those guys' heads and they couldn't get them out. It's just like when you get a tune stuck in your head, you can't get it out. Mm-hmm. And if all you do is sit there and hide it from other people and think about it yourself, you're stuck in your own head and it makes it worse. It makes it all worse. But it's when you go and even if you did journaling, my friend UJ Ramdas, who created the 5 minute journal, which is a very popular journal technique, he said journaling is like a toothbrush for the mind. And I thought that was just such an amazing analogy, because, you know, we floss our teeth and brush our teeth every day and we clean out our mouth, but we don't clean out the residuals in our brain. We don't get all the ideas out of our head. And, you know, I call it a brain dump and other people do call it free form journaling, but we need to get all the thoughts out of our head, and it's helpful. But then it's even more helpful to talk to other people, to do talk therapy, and just to get stuff out loud. You know, when I run my workshops, a lot of entrepreneurs come to me and they've never had a person that will listen to them about their entrepreneurial problems. And it's just really beneficial for them to go on and on and on and a rant and vent it out. And then they go, oh, they've been holding that up inside. And when you're holding anything up inside, it causes so much anxiety, whether it's about anxiety or business.
How do you avoid the fear of stigma? Because I know that's a big fear for family members and loved ones who have a loved one who is suffering from addiction, from people who have addiction, and just anybody who's suffering from, how do you overcome that?
It's all about first steps. And so it's similar to how we get started with anything. You know, if you say, oh, you got to go climb Mount Kilimanjaro tomorrow, I mean, people will be like, that doesn't make any sense. I haven't trained. But if you said, okay, you got 12 months to do it, well, okay, that means tomorrow I'm going to go and, you know, if I'm going from couch to Kilimanjaro, tomorrow I'm going to go for, you know, a 1 mile walk. And it's that first step. And it's just testing the waters. And so what you do is you find somebody who you're sure that you can share with. Not somebody who's going to be negative, who's going to laugh at you, but you just go and you mention something, you know, casually in passing, like, you know, I kind of had a tough day today. And they'll be like, hey, tell me more. And you'll be like, I feel kind of anxious. And maybe they'll say, you know, it's going to be okay. Or maybe they'll say, oh, you should go check out this book or something like that. But it's that first step. That's all you have to do. And then it makes it easier and easier and easier. And, you know, I read this in 2006, around the time I was going through the anxiety. I read one of my mentors in the marketing world, a guy named Dan Kennedy. He has a very little known book called his Unauthorized Biography. And he talks about in there about when he started sharing more stuff, it really helped his business. And then one of my friends used this great line last week that disclosure is disarming. And so when you actually find the right listener, the right positive person who's going to support you, and you go and you disclose something, then they are going to look at you different in a way that it's like, oh man, I can actually trust this person who just disclosed something more than I can trust somebody who's a perfect person. You know, if somebody's perfect, you don't want to tell them anything.
It's funny how people don't trust that person.
Yeah, it's so interesting because they just think, oh, well, that person's perfect. They're going to laugh at me. I'm not good enough for them. But, you know, like Oprah is the ultimate train wreck in all that she has disclosed over the years. But who do a lot of women trust more than anybody else in the world?
I've never heard Oprah described as a train wreck, but you're right.
Yeah, I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, her life has been tough.
Yeah, she puts everything out there. I mean, it's about her childhood, about her weight, about her relationships.
Yeah, and same with our friend Joe Polish. And I mean, Joe Polish, who is a business leader, has told everybody about his addictions and all the stuff that he's overcome. And who does everybody go to with, you know, if they have infidelity or if they have addiction, if they have family addiction, they all go to Joe. Because they know that Joe is at their level, that they've gone, that he's gone through the pain that they've gone through, that he can understand them, that he has empathy towards them. And it's because he is disclosed. And so you'll find that when you do a little bit of disclosing, you form a stronger relationship with the person who's on the other end, because now they know more about you. But you'll be surprised that, you know, most people, again, with proper foresight about who you share stuff with, most people are good people. They want to help you. And so they will go out of their way to find you help, to give you resources, to connect you with other people. And that's what I found, Eric. And now, you know, today, I mean, I would stand up on stage in front of a million people and tell people that, I was crippled by anxiety, and it wouldn't bother me, because at the end of the day, I mean, I've already gone through the anxiety. I mean, that was the worst thing. I mean, You can laugh at me, and that's still not going to be a fraction of the pain that I went through. So, I mean, you know, it's like that soldier. I mean, he was already dead. He was already dead. He can go and tell this story to anybody because he's already died. Mm-hmm. And so he's already gone to the worst of the worst. And so I'm really glad that he's out there telling his story, because he's showing other people, like, hey, not only can you come back from the dead, but you can tell this story. And in fact, not only do you get better because of it, but you help other people because of it. And nothing bad actually happens because of it. And that's the amazing thing. It's just, you know, it's like fear is false expectations appearing real. And everything is way worse in your mind than it is in reality.
Yeah, and I had Anna David, who is very open. She's a best-selling author, lives in Hollywood. And she talked about, when I talk about things, and I find that there are those people who will take little jabs at me, you know, the friendly jabs, they've raised their hand as somebody I no longer need in my life. Mm. So if anything, it's going to reveal those people that you don't want to start spending time with. And she uses that as a filter as well. But Craig, I know this is one of the reasons why I wanted you as part of the interview series, because you are very open. You have a lot of trust. You're very genuine and sincere. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all. I mean, I know that I was only able to get 100% well because of a book that somebody else wrote. It was called Panic Away. It was an ebook that I bought in 2006. Hmm. And I bought it the day after I went to the emergency room for the second time. And it was after they had told me there was nothing physically wrong with me. And then I opened up this ebook that I bought on the internet. And the first five words in the second chapter, I mean, that's where I stopped reading the book, because they almost literally cured me. And it said, there's nothing wrong with you. And as soon as I read those words, like the weight of the world was lifted. And I had also been told that there was nothing physically wrong with me. So now I was just like, actually, ironically, as soon as I read that, I thought, you know what? I'm way too busy for this anxiety stuff. So I've got other stuff to do. I'm not going to let this bother me anymore. And, you know, I had to fight it off a few other times, but it was the combination of the physical okay and the words in that ebook that changed me. And if, you know, somebody hadn't written that ebook because of what they had gone through, then it wouldn't have cured me, and it wouldn't have allowed me to go and help other people. Well, I'm finally writing my book, you know, 12 years after the fact, because I want to go and help other people, so that, you know, the more I share, the more people are like, okay, you know, this, you know, dumb kid who drank too much and got himself into trouble can overcome anxiety, then, you know, me with my lifestyle, my healthy lifestyle, I can get myself out of anxiety too.
So as we go into the three C's to your new life, I'd like to think about it in the context of people who have been suffered from addiction for quite a while. It's consumed the pursuit of the addiction and the high. That's what their life was busy about, mm-hmm. right? That's what's consumed their life. So when you become clean or you go into recovery, the dilemma that many people face are, now what? It's a question of, now what do I get busy with?
Sure.
Right? So as you go through this three C's, which are amazing, I'd love you to think of it in terms of that context, because that's one of the big struggles. And that's one of the reasons why many people relapse, is because they can't find anything to replace that high or the pursuit.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of analogies to some of the business people that I work with who work too much. You know, they call them workaholics, and they don't know what to replace that work time with. And so we actually, when we sit down, I say, you have to schedule fun, like going to the doctor. Like, you know, we have to schedule out, you know, a time for you to have fun. And not only that, but we need to make sure it is well planned, because if you don't have something planned in that time, you're going to revert back to the easiest thing, which is, you know, checking your email or doing some work. And I know, because I've had to do it to myself. And so the 3C formula is what I came up with to help me overcome anxiety. I needed more structure in my life. And so I started reading a lot of Stoic philosophy, and there was this quote from, which was translated from a man named Epictetus, who lived thousands of years ago. And he said, control what you can, cope with what you can't, and concentrate on what counts. And as soon as I
read, say that one more time.
Yeah, certainly. Control what you can, cope with what you can't, concentrate on what counts. And as soon as I read that, Eric, I just, you know, the weight of the world was again lifted from my shoulders, because now I wasn't thinking it in terms of addiction, but I was thinking it in terms of comparing myself to other people. And I realized I could only control myself. I could control my results. I can't control if somebody else is happier or more successful, richer, whatever. And besides, I mean, I can't control that. And if they weren't as successful, if I was more successful than them, you know, how does that really, you know, change anything? You know, and so I need to cope with what I can't control. And you can use this in terms of, you know, you can't cope with the fact, I mean, I can't cope with the fact that it's raining outside this window right now. It's raining here. If I want to bike to the store, which I fortunately did before it started raining, I mean, I can't control that rain. You can't control traffic. If you get stuck in traffic, you can sit there and yell, but it's not going to change the traffic. You know, if your boss is angry, it's not going to, you know, you can't control your boss's anger. You can't control if somebody else screwed up at work. You can't control if your kids get the flu or not. You know, once they got the flu, they got the flu, and you have to cope with what you can't control. And that's through planning. That's through planning ahead. And I always tell people to have two solutions for every foreseeable obstacle in their life. And there's a whole lot more obstacles that are foreseeable in your life than you might expect. You know, if you sat down on Sunday and said, hey, here are the 10 things that can go wrong this week, you'll probably come up with 20. And if you did, good. That means you can plan ahead for them. You know, you can plan ahead for, you know, I'm going to be left alone at 7 o'clock on Wednesday night for 2 hours while, you know, my friend or partner goes out for some social thing. And that could be a relapse time. What am I going to do in that time to stay out of trouble? You know, you can think like that. And then the final thing is concentrate on what counts. You know, put your energy into controlling what you can, ignoring what you can't, and concentrating on what counts, which is, in most cases, I'm helping people concentrate on what counts, which is their focus in life, their family, their health, and not worrying about what some celebrity is doing on the internet, what people are doing halfway around the world that you can't control, you know, whether it's politics or whether it's, you know, military or whether it's sports. I mean, you can sit there and yell at the TV all day long, but, you know, Aaron Rodgers is not going to change his performance in a football game because you're yelling at the TV. So we all need to understand that.
Wait, he's not?
Maybe if you make a doodle video and yell at him really loud, Eric. I don't know. You know, try as hard as you might, you know, sticking pins in the Tom Brady doll probably won't work. So, okay, now we can just boil our lives down to that. And what I did in my business, in my book, The Perfect Day Formula, is I did that for the day. We control what we can in the morning. We have the greatest control over what time we get up, what we do first thing, you know, what we eat for breakfast, what time we head out to work, all those things. And we can be proactive and get ahead of the game by having a good morning and set us up for victories. Or we can be reactive and get up late and throw away our mornings and therefore throw away our days. Now in the afternoon, we cope with what we can't control, which are emergencies from other people, our kids getting sick, all these things that eventually we'll have to cope with, but we can plan ahead. We can know, okay, if Johnny gets sick at school, here's plan A, we call grandma, here's plan B, we call the neighbor, and they're allowed to go and pick them up and take care of them. You know, you can plan ahead for a lot of problems. And then finally, you concentrate on what counts. You do all that structured work during the day so you can go home and be present with your family at night. Now, how do we apply that to the person struggling with addiction? All right, what can they control? Well, you know, if I go back to when my father was around and, you know, he never won the battle, he eventually drank himself to death.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we fortunately had a lot of time together at the end. And so, you know, I learned, you know, everything was as good as it could have been. But, you know, well, if you got stuff in the house, you're going to drink it. Just like when I tell people who are trying to lose weight, if you got a bag of potato chips in the house, you're going to eat them. Don't, you know, you control what's in the house. You control who you spend your time with. You control what environments you put yourself in. And so, obviously, if you hang out with a drinking buddy in a bar surrounded by alcohol, you're going to have a really hard time overcoming any addictions, obviously. So we control what we can by the relationships we start, by the people we spend our time with, the environments we put ourselves in.
How important is a community aspect to that? In other words, not just making the list by yourself, but getting an accountability partner or having mom or sister or somebody that you trust to, because the last person that I found that I can trust when I have anxiety is myself, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't often recognize that I'm headed down the path and I'm just seconds away from blowing up.
Yeah, sure. It's a really great question. And the answer, of course, is you need to surround yourself with as many positive people as you can, like-minded positive people, those people who you've tested the waters with and realize that they're not going to take a jab at you. They're not going to be the person who wants to sabotage you. And oftentimes, you know, anybody who's, there's a lot of people dealing with food addictions and they work in offices and they say, no, I don't want to go for pizza. And then all of a sudden everybody starts teasing them, right? And that's really hard. And it's the same way when I stopped drinking, you know, I would go out and people would give me a hard time. Oh, you're not drinking. Oh, you know, and it, I mean, they didn't say, oh, you should drink, but they just said, oh, you're not drinking. And the way they said it, and you know, your blood pressure goes through the roof and you're just like, just leave me alone. Just like, let's hang out and, you know, leave me alone for the fact that I'm not drinking. So eventually I had to avoid some of those things. You know, living and leading by example also brings people over to your side eventually. So, you know, stay strong as much as you can. And then the accountability you mentioned, you know, being around someone who you like and who you want to, you know, get help from. And it's really important when you get the accountability buddy that you get somebody who you do not want to disappoint. And so I found this for my own personal struggles is, you know, I was a bit of a jerk back in the day. And so I needed friends around me who would make me be my best self. And when I disappointed them, they would give me a look or they would have a stern talking to me after. And I realized I'm so glad I picked these people as accountability partners because I didn't want to disappoint them. So the next time that we went out, I made sure that I acted much better and I didn't make any rude jerk comments. And over time, I've become, you know, and I like to say I went from a big dick to a little dick. You know, now I'm not, as much of a jerk. And it's because I had accountability to it. Now, obviously with addiction, we're talking about something that is, you know, physical manifestation. You know, there's so many chemicals involved here that these things can help a lot. But there's obviously a much stronger pull compared to, you know, being a jerk. I mean, that's just, you know, you have much greater control over that. But accountability is key. Positive people are key. I mean, if you were around, if you were in perfect world around positive people and away from, you know, whatever you're addicted to, you'd recover faster. Now, in the real world, we can't be, but it all comes down to, okay, control what you can. Control the people around you, control the environment so that, you know, it makes it, it's harder for you to slip back into it, whether it's a pornography addiction, an alcohol addiction, an information addiction, which, you know, I used to be addicted to the news and I, you know, I had to put up blockages around that and stay away from it in order to overcome it. And so all of these things, I like to use the image of building a fence around yourself. You can build a fence with positive people, with the right environment, with accountability, and you know, with this 3C formula. And when you have those things in place, you can really protect yourself from the things that are evil to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, for the family members and loved ones of people who are currently in treatment or recovery, or haven't hit that stage yet, this applies just as much to those who are trying to support as well, because there's a lot of collateral damage. And addicts will wake up one day realizing that it wasn't about them. And we hear often from people who have suffered from addiction, I wasn't even thinking about you, right? You were the last thing on my mind, not because I don't care, but because I just wanted my hit, right? Yeah. I was pursuing something totally different. But family members and loved ones can take that in a very personal way. And that can be very traumatic and create a lot of anxiety. So I think also for family members and loved ones, from what you're stating, is apply this 3C formula to your life as well. You know, find those other people who will support you in your journey and in trying to support your loved one as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can apply this to every area of your life. From, you know, finding the person of your dreams, to overcoming the addictions, to helping somebody else overcome their addictions, to overcoming the, you know, going through the recovery of losing somebody. I mean, it's all, I mean, everybody needs this formula. It works for everything. And so however you can apply it, please do. And that way it takes the place of willpower and discipline to an effect, because mm-hmm. when you're planning ahead, you know, if you keep all the temptations out of your life, or, you know, the worst ones, you know, a little chocolate cake now and then is okay. But, you know, if you keep most of the temptations out of your life, you're not going to have to deal with them. And so you can use your strength and resilience in other areas.
Yeah. I've heard somebody say it's easier to avoid than to have to resist.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Because willpower is a depletable resource. It's like muscle energy. You know, you only have enough energy to go and run a certain number of miles, and you only have enough willpower to hold off a certain number of things. And, you know, the funny thing is that willpower is strongest in the morning when we wake up, and it gets depleted over the day. I mean, but the thing is, most people have no temptations in the morning, maybe a donut. But other than that, you know, even my dad didn't drink till the afternoon, you know? And so most people have the discipline in the morning, when they have no temptations, and then they have no discipline in the evening when they have all the temptations. And so it's really stacked against us unless you put, you know, that fence and the 3C formula into place.
How much of that do you think is us being busiest in the morning?
I think it's a good part of that. I think it's also that we have better intentions first thing in the morning. Like, you know, oh, you know, today I'm not going to do this. And I think a lot of times you're, you know, especially for the addict, they're probably like in a world of hurt in the morning too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I know as a, you know, in college, I would wake up so hungover and, you know, give the old, I'm never drinking again. And then, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock rolls around and you can get something down your throat and, you know, there's another party and away you go. And somehow mm-hmm. you manage to pull it off.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to give an example of somebody that you've worked with that has applied this formula and is thriving now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I like to use the extreme example of mothers with young children who are also entrepreneurs. And, you know, it's funny that some of my worst reviews on my Amazon book, you know, I have a couple of 3-star reviews that were critical, and they were like, you know, they're from a mom of one who said, oh, this won't work. And then some of my best reviews are from moms of 3 or 4 who are like, when I put this formula into place, I started, you know, just getting 10 minutes up 10 minutes earlier in the morning. So I had 10 minutes to myself. And so here's a mom with, you know, three more kids than the mother who said it won't work, showing them that, hey, yeah, this formula will work, because you don't need to get up hours early. You don't need to go to extremes. You just need to do a little bit of planning and preparation so that you get those few extra minutes in the morning where you can actually get yourself together before you get thrown into the craziness of having children. And just that, controlling that, allowed them to have more success. They saw the victories. They got the momentum, the snowball rolling. They were able to cope with the, you know, the chaos in the afternoon because they had a mental mind shift that instead of saying, oh, you know, nothing's going to go wrong today. They were like, you know what? Something's going to go wrong today. But I'm prepared because I know plan A doesn't work. I got plan B and you can throw anything at me. And it's all mindset. You know, it's just like the right football coach is prepared for anything, any play. And that's why they succeed. But if they just think the same old stuff is coming, then they're going to be surprised. And then finally, when they concentrate on what counts, when they actually go, you know what? I need to, you know, Craig's helped me think about what actually matters in my life, and I can shut out all this stuff that's on television. It doesn't matter what the Kardashians are doing today. I don't have to keep up with that crap. And if I don't keep up with it, you know, there shouldn't be any stress on me. I mean, we put so much of our energy into keeping up with other people and other things that, again, mm-hmm. don't matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the news these days, there's a lot of stuff going on that people get wrapped up in. Now, you certainly should are okay to have an opinion on things, but for people to go into like these deep dives of reading, you know, every article on CNN and New York Times, I mean, a lot of people are looking for drama in their life because otherwise they're just left with their own thoughts. And most people can't stand to be alone with their own thoughts. What can they fill their time with? Oh, it's drama from outside. And unfortunately, you know, we can also put our own personal dramas in there to fill up our time and really waste our lives.
What have you found is the best way to increase confidence? Is it by reviewing what you were able to do? How do you keep momentum, and how do you, you know, when you slip, how do you restart?
It's a great question. And, you know, the thing is, you know, earlier this week, I worked with a guy who's on the verge of having a $1 billion company, and he struggles with self-doubt and confidence because he's, you know, he's dealing with bankers who have MBAs from Harvard, and he's just some guy from, Tennessee. And he struggles with that. And so, I mean, so the lesson is that everybody deals with self-confidence issues. So don't think that, you know, you're the only person. I mean, I deal with it, but I've overcome it a little bit through what I mentioned before, which is first steps and small victories. You know, whether it's having confidence to go up and talk to a girl, or whether it's, you know, confidence to be less introverted, because I very much was introverted when I was younger. And now I can go to events like where you and I meet, Eric, and I can talk to other entrepreneurs, whereas before I'd try and bolt out of a room and not talk to anyone. And it all comes from testing, just like we test for positive people. We put something out there and we see that, oh, wait, this wasn't as bad as I think. And then we do a little reflection and we think, well, okay, I said that. I probably could have said something better. So next time I'll say this. And you go out and you test and like, oh, you know, now you take two steps forward. And then you take one step back and you do a little reflection, and now you take two more steps forward the next time. And it's just slowly you build that confidence up to, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I was so scared of all this stuff. Because again, it was all false expectations appearing real. That's the acronym for fear. Mm-hmm. That's what stops us from doing so much in life. And I just encourage everyone just to try, you know, try a little baby step, because a little baby step leads to big steps and big victories and total mindset changes about what they can accomplish in life.
Yeah, that's so valuable. And you just speak really concisely about it. And I know it sounds so easy, right? But it's always the easy, understandable formulas that are proven and tested over time that are the ones that work the best.
I just want to tell a story that most people will appreciate because it's about a celebrity dealing with addiction. And so, you know, Stephen King, well, I read his book On Writing, and Stephen King doesn't even remember writing Cujo. That's what he says. He doesn't remember writing Cujo. That's crazy. And it's because he was drinking 18 tall boys of beer a day. And what he realized he had to do was, at the end of the day, he had to pour all the beers in the sink when he wanted to go to bed. Otherwise, he would get up and drink them. He said they were calling to him. Hmm. Yeah. And so that's an example of the 3C formula. I mean, first of all, he shouldn't have bought the beers in the first place. But what could he control after he had drank enough? He could pour them down the sink. And that was the first step. That was maybe one of the first steps that helped him get sober again. Eventually he did, and he still writes all his books, and you know, they're probably just as crazy as ever, but that was his first step. And so, you know, that first step to getting confidence, the first step to overcoming those beers that are in the fridge, the first step to moving ahead, to opening up, to overcome the anxiety. The first step is to do something. Action beats anxiety. Motion beats meditation.
What have you found is the best way to celebrate your successes, as small as they may be?
Oh, that's great. So gratitude journaling is one really great way to remind yourself that almost all the best things in life are small. Mm-hmm. And in most cases, free. And in most cases, you can have them even if you're envious of other people. I mean, I dealt with envy for a long, long time. I still have a little bit of it. And I realized, my goodness, you know, when I do my gratitude journaling at the end of the day, I'm thankful for my dog. I'm thankful for, you know, the farm that I live on with fresh air. Mm-hmm. I mean, if, you know, if I had 10 times more money, nothing would change. I'd still have the dog, and I'd still have, you know, I'd still be here, and I'd still be, you know, eating an apple, you know, which doesn't cost a lot of money. So, so, you know, it's gratitude journaling was good. Sharing it with other people, being positive and sharing their positives and listening to their positives and just, you know, being grateful, always looking on the bright side of things, keeping my social media as positive as possible. I'm actually a believer. Most people say the opposite, that social media is all bad. I'm a believer that social media can be one of the best things in your life if you filter it properly and you only allow yourself to see updates from people who only post positive things. If somebody posts, if I'm friends with somebody and they post a political thing, I unfollow their updates but remain friends with them. Unless it's something where I'm like, oh my gosh, how can I be friends with this person? But if, you know, if they're talking about this person or that person in politics, I'm just like, I'm not going to see this in my newsfeed. So
yeah,
I just won't see it. And so all I see are the positive people. And it, I mean, it means it's not a lot of people, but that's all that matters. And so I, you know, I get benefits from social media, the positives of it, the victories. And so, you know, you can go and share your positives on social media and be a person out there and giving good to the world.
Yeah. You know, and I heard that people are the greatest source of anxiety, other people, but they're also the greatest source of healing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So whichever side of the fence you're on, you're always going to have people involved, or should anyway.
Yeah.
It's a question of what type of people that you have, and left to our own minds and our own thoughts and our own seclusion, that's never a great path, right?
No. And that's actually, you know, my book on overcoming anxiety is separated into three sections. The first is about nutrition, exercise, breathing, sleep, meditation, you know, this the stuff that you can get quick wins from. And then the second part is all about getting out of your own head, which we talked about before. You know, don't let those worms get in there. And, you know, going and speaking with other people. And the third section is all about giving. What I found is when I made my life about others and not about me, that anxiety was never a factor anymore. Even with the envy that I struggled with, Eric, what I realized was, and this goes back to like 2013, it was a summertime, and one of my friends, Vince Del Monte, he's a very good friend of mine. He's in the muscle building online business space. And he had just emailed me and said, hey, Craig, you know, just launched my new product, you know, it's going really well. And I got envious of him. You know, I was thinking, well, I've been around longer than him. I should be more successful. It's so stupid. And I realized how much shame that I had about that. And so right then I took a thank you card and I wrote a thank you card to Vince telling him, thank you for being a leader in the industry. Thank you for being a great father, a role model, all this. And I put it in the mail and I felt so much better. I felt so much better. I'd overcome my anxiety and envy by giving. And now I actually send a thank you card every single day in the mail. Every single day. Some days I send four.
I've been the recipient of one of them.
And I love it. It puts a smile on my face when I it puts a smile on my face naturally when I put it in. And then I also smile because I think this person has no idea this thank you card is coming. And all they probably get is negative crap in the mail. And I'm actually going to make somebody's day with this. And I put a lot of effort into the words that I put into those cards because it's something that I know can really change somebody's day. And so going back to, you know, just getting out of yourself, this is a powerful thing you can do. If you go out and you do nothing and you say, okay, you know what? I'm anxious right now. What if I went and helped somebody else out? I bet you you'll feel better.
Yeah, I would even throw out the challenge, the simple challenge of whoever is listening, write a thank you card today and send it to somebody that would totally not expect it. Mm-hmm. It's probably yes. going to be somebody that you're really close to, like your mom, your spouse, your son, your daughter, your sister, your brother. But it could be your boss too. You never know.
And old mentors. I mean, I love, having a moment where like, oh my gosh, I never thanked my high school teacher for the fact that even though we didn't get along, back then, they taught me so many great messages, or my old hockey coach, and I'll write these people letters and they'll just be like, oh, this person must went off the deep end. They're writing me thank you letters. But but they're also probably like, wow, finally someone actually thanked me for, what I was doing was, they were being our accountability person. And the best accountability person has to be hard on you. Because if my friends, when I was going from big jerk to little jerk, if they were not hard on me, if they didn't give me a talking to, I wouldn't have changed. Mm. And so, just like a teacher, if they weren't hard on us, we wouldn't have learned, we wouldn't have changed. And so they're doing a thankless job. And so you can send it to somebody who's definitely has changed your life. And there's a lot of power to it. And I probably spend including mail or postage, I probably spend about $1,500 or $2,000 a year on thank you cards, but it's probably better than that much in therapy.
Yeah. Just the very process of thinking through who, what do I write? What did they do? How did I respond? Probably not well enough. Mm-hmm. Just that process alone there's a lot involved there. Very healing and very, very good for somebody.
Very cathartic, and a lot of people need a lot more catharsis in their life.
Yeah, we do. Absolutely, every day, no matter what level you're on. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Craig. I know this is going to be really helpful. I'm sure that everybody listening to it is loving it. What else, where can we find you? Are there any books that you would recommend somebody read?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to give a couple
of your books, and so just throw that at me.
So one of the books that changed my life was The Art of Living. It's a translation of Epictetus, the Stoic philosopher's teachings. And it's written by a woman named Sharon LaBelle. It's a little book. And I recommend reading a page a day. It's almost like your horoscope. It's going to say the right thing at the right time. Mm-hmm. So that's really important. I send out a daily message as well, a daily morning quote. So if people want
those are great.
Yeah. So if people want to go to themorningmessage.com, they'll get my morning quote. And then my book is available for free. Just pay shipping and handling. If you go to freeperfectdaybook.com, it'll help you structure your day. It'll explain the 3C formula. It'll help you overcome some of your anxiety, and will also help you get clarity on what you need to do going forward with the vision of your life. And then I'll have my new book, Overcoming Anxiety, coming out in early 2018.
Great. Anything else?
Find me on the social media, twitter.com/CraigValentine or instagram.com/RealCraigValentine. Not the fake one, the real one.
The real one. Yeah. I love how that's become a thing.
I know. It's so great. It makes me feel like 10 times more famous. Oh, he had to get the real Craig Valentine because obviously someone else is faking.
Craig Valentine is really not Craig Valentine.
That's right.
All right. So one last question. What is a question I should have asked you that I didn't?
What is the one thing that people can do tomorrow to start getting control?
Okay.
Great. And that is to wake up an extra 5, 10, or 15 minutes early, not hours early, but 5, 10, or 15 minutes early. Go down to your kitchen table and sit there with pen and paper, no electronics, and think about what's the number one thing that I can focus on right now to overcome a problem in my life or to take advantage of an opportunity in my life. So if it's, dealing with a son or daughter's addiction, if you sat there and you thought about all the people that you can contact and reach out to, all the options, all the ways, all the, their friends that you can reach out to and ask for help. I mean, all these things, most people, again, they just don't spend any time in self-reflection or introspection. And so if you just sat there and you got all that stuff out of your head and you're like, oh, you know what? I never thought of this solution until now. I need to go and, you know, talk to this person and get their help, or talk to this person and connect, you know, my son or daughter or my uncle or whoever is dealing with addiction or myself, you know, to that person. And this will be a first step towards the path to recovery. And if you do that every single day, no matter what you're working on, it could be work related, it could be writing a book, 15 minutes a day, 6 days a week is 72 hours in a year of clear, uninterrupted thinking. And if you devote that time to your number one problem in life, or your number one opportunity in life, you will get so much further ahead than everybody else that you will be a changed person in just a few weeks.
Yeah. You can't under marginalize momentum.
Mm, exactly. Get that victory first thing in the morning. We need it.
Yeah. And do it every day. That was a perfect place to end, Craig. And I thank you so much. It's been super valuable. Very lots of wisdom there. And, my friend, I really appreciate it. I super look forward to the next time we see each other.
Thank you so much, Eric. This is one of the best conversations I've ever had, and I've done over 150 interviews because we went deep. We went deeper in, and you know, more raw, and you know, into really emotional stuff. And so, thank you for inviting me to do this.
Okay, appreciate it. Thanks, Craig.
I'd love to hear your thoughts about today's show. The bottom line is that we all need to take first steps towards doing the right thing. It doesn't matter if that means overcoming addiction or taking up exercise or working on your number one priority in life. Take action right now. So please send your feedback on today's show to support@earlyarise.com or to me on social media at instagram.com/realcraigvalentine or twitter.com/craigvalentine. Thanks for listening to Early to Rise Radio. Please head over to iTunes and rate today's show and share with your friends. And don't forget to get a head start on your success. Take control of your morning so that you can own your life and dominate your days. Get the detailed blueprint for your life at freeperfectdaybook.com.